Good evening, Abba Yisrael. Good evening, good evening. I was just thinking that in honor of the Hespedim taking place with regards to Baal Leib, I just wanted to share with you two thoughts that come to mind with regards to Baal Leib Steinmann, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodesh Vorche, that I witnessed myself. One was, I remember that I didn't learn in Bnei Brak. I wasn't Zeuche. I wasn't quite Zecher to learn in Bnei Brak. I was in Yerushalayim. But I did go in a few times to Baal Leib. My cousin used to learn with him every single day. So he brought me in a few times. One of the things I remember very clearly was going in Baal Leib's flat, which is legendary by now. Apparently, I don't recommend anybody to go on online, but apparently on YouTube you can see actually the flat. It's been somebody took a video of it. So whilst I don't, if you've got access, then, you know, but it's quite amazing to see the flat that he lived. Something that I remember clearly is that he used to sit on a chair which didn't recline. You couldn't recline on the chair. And the reason for that apparently was because he felt that you don't need to recline. It's golos and it's tzos and kalisol. He felt that there's no need to recline. He was already, when I remember going to him, the few times I went, he was probably in his 80s, maybe in his 90s, I don't know, but he didn't feel the need to sit back in a chair. He didn't feel the need to sit back in a chair. When people came for tzoros and all the problems that are happening, he feels he doesn't need to sit back. So never mind, you know, people in that kind of fame and that kind of importance, they tend to have very comfortable chairs. You know, think of any CEO that you know, any important man that takes important decisions, what kind of leather chairs. But Baal Leib had a very simple chair and he wouldn't recline on it. That's a Baal Leib person who is completely mufka, completely removed, like any gashmis had absolutely no meaning to him. The wallpaper was down and everything. He simply had no meaning to him. He had absolutely no meaning to him. Gashmis had really no meaning to him. And that's not something a person is born with. That's a person who works on himself for years and years and years. He suddenly comes to realization that, you know, that all the luxuries is really nothing you can take with. Like we say in Yiddish, there's the saying that a kittel doesn't have pockets. In Yiddish is a saying. Sagen, a kittel doesn't have pockets. You know, the kittel doesn't have pockets. And that's because the Mishnah says that you don't take with. A kittel hat nicht kesheness. That's how you say a kittel hat nicht kesheness. A kittel doesn't have pockets. Kashanis means pockets, yeah. A kittel doesn't have pockets. Because you can't take anything with.
You've got to keep your snuff in the
yeah. Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't take anything with. Like, as the Mishnah says in Ovis, you don't take with not money, not jewels, not
you know. Mother said to me and brother, she said you come in the world and
doesn't
go out.
You go absolutely.
When a baby is born,
he comes in, he absolutely thinks he can. When a person, absolutely, yeah. So that's the Baal Leib was completely. He realized you don't take anything. All you have is your mitzvahs and your ma'asim tovim, and there's nothing to take with. It's interesting that Sforim did have quite a lot, but I understand that he didn't actually purchase them himself. They were given. Most people, the only way to show cause the tov to Baal Leib was by giving him a nice sefer. So Sforim there was a lot of Sforim shank with a lot of Sforim, but a lot of bookshelves, but there was not, but you had absolutely no possessions. I don't know if I mentioned another story about davening. Did I mention it here? Who in a different, did I mention it here about davening? So I remember one very clear case as well that, another case that was that, I remember davening mincha by him. And this is also going back probably like 10, 15, well, must be more than 10 years ago. I'm here already 10 years, so must be probably like 15 years ago. So I remember that I daved mincha there once, and the way it was like first comes, first served. There was no, you could just daven mincha by him. I don't know if it was quarter to one or quarter to two. I don't remember exactly what time you daven mincha there. And everybody just came in, you go in, and you daven mincha in his house, in his flat, on the Chof Chazanish. And I remember so clearly that there was, before Mincha, somebody smashed, two things happened at Mincha. Somebody smashed the window, and it was also interesting to notice that somebody smashed, it was like the door inside, there was like the doors with like windows, what are they called? You know, like, I mean, like in the dining room, it was like doors with, like, you know, with
glass panels,
yeah. Glass panels, thank you, yeah. And then I remember somebody smashed it. And I remember clearly how he looked at it. You know, he obviously looked at it, his own, there was like 50, 60 people in that room. And he looked up. He looked up, and you could see how little it meant nothing to him. Like he didn't care. Like somebody smashed it. He didn't want to know who is it, what happened, how did it happen, and I'll be moichel. You know, none of that. It just simply meant nothing to him. You know, like he just like made a sign that somebody should sweep off the damage. You know, like nobody should get hurt from it. But it really had no meaning to him. And what's so interesting, so powerful is that a person is not born like that. A person is not born. A person naturally has kashmir means to. It means something. You know, a person's house, a person's windows, a person's doors. A person wants to look after. But he was like after many years of intense work on his own sheifas, it just didn't mean anything to him anymore. It just it had no meaning to him. So that was that happened at Mincha, and then after somebody took his grandson, his son with, and we're davening. I was standing right behind Rabbi Aaron Leib. We're davening mincha, and then it's one bedroom flat, and there was the stender where somebody davened, and Rabbi Aaron Leib was there, and the next to him there was a mattress, and that was the mattress that I didn't realize b'shas ma'aser, but I was sure that's where Rabbi Aaron Leib sleeps. That was his bedroom as well as his everything else, and it was that mattress like literally that thick, like somebody says that it was thicker than most people's schnitzels. Yeah, that was somebody said. It was thicker than most people's schnitzels. And he had it, apparently he got it from the Jewish agency when he moved to Edsel some 50, 60 years ago. He never changed the mattress. That was the mattress that he had. That was the mattress that Abraham Lim had. It was like that thick. And I remember that there was a child that during Shemoneh Esrei jumped on it. Somebody, a child, 5 years old, 5 years old, 7 years old, was a bit immature, and it was just like, jumping on that mattress during Shemoneh Esrei because it was getting bored. And what happened was, I was literally standing by my lab. I was finished with my Shemoneh Esrei already. And I saw how this child fell on, was jumping a bit too high and fell on the bound lab. He like went flying straight on the bound lab. After jumping a bit too thing, he went flying onto the bound lab. He was a Yid in his 80s, by the way. No, God Lador in his 80s, and he was like went flying onto his shoulders. And I remember clearly that I was watching this. I was finished my Shemoneh Esrei already, and I saw how Rabban Leib didn't blink. It. I don't know if you noticed. He was talking to somebody. He was talking to Moshe. He was talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He didn't blink. Like most people, you have got a reaction. You've got a reaction that if somebody goes flying on you from the back, you look back. You don't know what's flying over here, but it didn't. He didn't look back. I was standing behind, and I saw this child went flying, whoops, onto a bound leap, and he didn't blink. And that's not something naturally. Somebody's not inborn like that. A person's got natural instinct, natural reactions. What's called natural is natural reactions. Is that reflex? That's right. But he was beyond that. He was talking to the Bnei Shleilim, so he didn't notice that somebody went flying on him. And it's just crazy because you'd have thought that something 200 years back or something. You know, you hear about Bekvega. But this is something, it's quite unbelievable. So that's a bound leap. I also want to point out something which strikes many people as well, is that bound leap doesn't come from a Rabbonish family. Rabban Leib's father wasn't a Gadol HaDor, Rabban Leib's grandfather wasn't a Gadol HaDor, Rabban Leib's great-grandfather was, it was all chosh and nice families, but there was no Gdolim in that very family. It's not like, you know, some families are running the show for hundreds of years. You know, there's such families that are like really, you know, it's like family that are rabbinical families from the times of Maral of Prague down, and they are leader families in Klal Yisrael. Rabban Leib wasn't any of that. And it just shows that Klal Yisrael implants in every day. If somebody really, really, really works, if somebody really, really tries, and somebody really does everything towards it, the person gives the person that, you know, he gives. So Rabban Leib was a unique Kach in Klal Yisrael, which he built completely on himself, and he wasn't in his genes. Fine, Rabbi Yisrael, having said that, this was my personal experience about my own emotions with regards to Rabban Leib, a little bit that I was able to see. We are up to Sim Resh Ein Zayin Shlaligum Kibbu Yaneh. That's on page 114. We started it yesterday. I'm going to just go over it briefly again before we continue. if there's a candle which is lit behind the door. Also, if the kedaka don't open the door, the kedaka the normal way, and we spoke about the machlokes as to whether it's because of the gush of wind or because of the door that causes it to extinguish when you open the door. So either way, Shema, and the Shulchan Aruch continues and says Shema Chabenu Aruch because we're concerned about the the wind blowing it out. Shema Chabenu Aruch. Avolino el adeles kedarkei mutter. This Rabbi said these four words, these five words in the Ramah, tell us Avolino el adeles kedarkei mutter. It says you're allowed to close the door in its regular way. So we're talking about a wind. Rabbi said this is really important. We've got a wind over here. You're allowed to close the door. To shut it from the wind, that's permitted. Why are you allowed to do that? Why not to close the door if it's windy? Oh, that's the key word. That is the key word. Because you're preventing a melacha to take place. You're preventing it from, you're preventing kibbuy to take place. You're preventing kibbuy from happening. Why are you wasting grammar? Why?
Because you haven't done the melacha. You just, it is the way it is, and you haven't sort of, you haven't engineered it as such, have you?
So,
argue to grammar, maybe.
Yeah, very good. So the truth is, your mum is spot on, because the reason why you're not allowed to open the door is because it's a grammar. So now we are saying, but you're right. We're saying that the Ramah says, and Shem Zalman is very busy with it, we'll get to that in a minute, Mr. Shem. So the Ramah says, that closing the door, that's mutter. And because the wind is not going, the wind, you know, let's wait a second. I want to get to that in a minute because Shlomo Zalman is really busy with it. It seems that also with regards to the chaloin, the window, which is opposite the candle, which is on the table. So when you want to close the window, opposite the window, you've got a table. And on that table is a candle. That's mutter as well. Closing the window is mutter as well. I'm continuing a few words in the Shulchan, a few lines in the Shulchan Aruch. V'im kavua b'koisel shachar adeles. If you've got a fixed fixed candle which is attached on the wall, shachar adeles, behind the door, also liftach adeles, you're allowed to open the door, and to close the door in its regular way, because perhaps what's going to happen is that the door, you're going to have an impact. Nakesh is referring to an impact. That by slamming the door open, you've got a candle behind the door. And imagine the door, just when you open the door, it's going to knock on, it's going to have an impact onto a candle which is attached onto the wall. What you're likely to extinguish the candle. And that's also. So causing an impact, which perhaps is going to extinguish the candle, that's also. What you're allowed to do, if you're opening and closing the door in a gentle manner, which is not going to affect the candle at all, that's permitted. What happens if the candle is attached onto the door itself? Have you ever seen such a thing? Never seen it. I don't exactly know what case this is, what scenario, what exactly the circumstance are, but Shulchan Aruch says, if you've got a candle which is attached, pardon? You've seen that the candle they've got attached onto the...
It's like an arm like that.
Seen it on the wall. Oh. So you've got a candle onto the door.
Like an arm on the door.
Oh, very interesting. Okay, that's what he's talking about. If you've got a candle which is kavua, fixed onto the delis atzmo, onto the door itself, that by opening and closing it, you are mekarev Hashem elaneh. You are inevitably getting the oil closer to the candle. It's like you're gonna, it's gonna get closer. The distance is gonna get, it's gonna get closer to the candle. Or inevitably, it's gonna get further away. So when it comes to an oil candle, where you have wicks in there, it's inevitably going to cause something, either the oil to get further to the wicks, or the opposite, going to get closer. by opening and closing the door, which has on it affixed that candle, also then it's also to actually open and close the door. Because by opening and closing the door, the oil is going to get all... Do you know what I mean? You're opening and closing the door. There's the candle over here. There's the wicks and the oil in here. By opening and closing, you're going to shockle it. You're going to move it. You're going to shake it. And either the oil is going to get further from the wicks or the opposite. It's like something is going to happen there. And therefore, you're not allowed to open and close the door in this scenario. But if it's a wax candle, which is affixed onto the door, there you'd be permitted to open and close the door. But then it's affixed onto the door because you're not getting the oil. There's not that reason of the oil doesn't apply. It's not relevant over here because the wax candle being attached to the door, you're opening and closing it, nothing will happen to the wax candle. Now, I want to address this very important and famous words of the Gemara that we addressed earlier that Rabbi Yossel mentioned about linoil hadeles connect the mutter. We're learning the following halacha, and we have to understand the concept behind this halacha. The Gemara says that you are allowed to close the door if it's windy outside. Similarly, allowed to close the window if it's windy, and by doing that, the melacha is not going. There is no. You're making the kibui, it's not going to happen. So this is the makor and the source and the foundation of the discussion we got to the much discussed Shabbos clock. Because Shlomo Zalman wrote the tshuva, in which was asked, and I just checked up, the tshuva goes back to 1950s. So Shlomo Zalman was a young man then, he was in his 40s then. He wasn't like Shlomo Zalman, the famous Shlomo Zalman, when he was 60 years old. He was 40 years old when he wrote this tshuva. And Shlomo Zalman was asked the following shaila, and he said, what's the halacha with regards to if you've got a Shabbos clock? Can you change the times when a Shabbos clock? So say it's on, can you make it go off later? Say it's off, can you make it go on later? Can you change the settings of a Shabbos clock? Now he's got one part of the show which is not relevant anymore nowadays. Do you remember the old-fashioned Shabbos clock with the little metal things that you take in and out? You still got it? Okay, good. Okay, so those, he addresses that. So there he's got discussion with regards to muktzah. If those little pieces are muktzah or not. That's a machlokes of Shlomo Zalman and Moshe. But leaving out the muktzah element of it, which is not for now, but the actual fact of changing the timings of the time switch, of the Shabbos clock. Is that a problem or not? So Shlomo Zalman wants to suggest the following. And this famous tshuva. And he says, it's a classic, this tshuva. It's Mamash a classic. Shlomo Zalman says that like we are finding over here, that preventing melocha from happening is mutter. You're closing the door. Shlomo says it's mutter. You're allowed to close the door to prevent wind of blowing in. So he says similarly also, if you've got, you want that, the status is that it's on, and you want it to go off later. Let's say your hot plate is on, and it's meant to go off at 2, and you want it to go off at 4. So says Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, to make it go off later, all you're doing is you're preventing a melacha from happening. Says Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, it's mutter. If the lights are off, and it's meant to go on, but you don't need to go on yet, you made a mistake. You wanted to go on 2 hours later. You're preventing from a melacha take place at a certain time. You want it to take place later. Shlomo Zalman says, "Yeah, 1 second. You're preventing a melacha from taking place." He said, "In this particular case, this is a bit more. Yeah, right. This is not so posh, that one." But Shlomo Zalman says, "If you've got a state, it's now on a status of being on." And you want it to go off, the kibbutz to take place later, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says, that's mutter. So if you've got the light on, and it's meant to go off at 2, and you want it to go off later, he says, what you're doing is a gram kibbutz. That's no different than, he said, that preventing from melacha from taking place, that's going to be mutter, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but I'm saying even on Shabbos, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is matter. On Yom Tov, you might not need to come onto this Reb Shlomo Zalman. Yeah, you might need to come on. So now I want to just say that this is the famous Psak of Reb Shlomo Zalman. It's well known that some people rely on this Reb Shlomo Zalman. Reb Shlomo Zalman himself, even in Yeshiva, didn't recommend to use this color. His own Bochim, his own Talmidim in the Kol Torah, didn't want them to use this color. But he did write in Shmuel Shabbos Kelchosa, and other posts came out over disagree with this Psak, and Reb Shlomo Zalman himself again wasn't much happy to rely on it. Reb Moshe disagreed in principle, and he said, "You're doing melacha by doing that. You're doing a proper melacha by doing that. Can you think of a reason why? Why would Reb Moshe disagree?" He doesn't explain himself, Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe's got a short shuvah, which was written in the 70s. And he says, if you just extend the current settings, you're even a melacha d'oraisa. He says melacha. I imagine he means...
You're making it go off at some point.
You would have to hope for some reason there's another ground.
So, correct.
That's the reason why... Gezeira is the point, isn't it? Because if it was a like building the modern equivalent of building a raft, not building a raft, they're not swimming because you can't build a raft. It's sort of kind of a gezeira around it. You're saying he says...
Very good. So there's a bit of both. There is a Reb Moshe elsewhere which doesn't like, in principle, the Shabbos. We spoke about that once. Reb Moshe Stamazoi didn't like Shabbos clock. He says because of Zilusa, the Shabbos is with Shabbos clocks, you can have whole factories running on Shabbos. That he didn't like in principle. That's that kind of gzera that you're mentioning now. But besides that, he seems to be saying that is with regards to this particular case that we're discussing now. He said he calls it a melacha. Rav Yashiv also, he calls it a melacha, and it seems to imply that it's the reisa. So I think that Rabbi Kagan's point is he doesn't actually say it straight out. But it looks like, how do you look at it? Do you look at it as a melacha or the rabbanon, or do you understand Rav Shlomo Zalman the best? To extend the current settings.
You're not preventing, you're just delaying.
Oh. So therefore, he's saying that it's not, very good. You're delaying it, and by delaying it, so he's saying that by delaying it, you probably got more an active involvement in the kibbuy, which is also. Is that what you're saying? Are you explaining a reason why it should be prohibited? That preventing is one thing. Preventing, that we hear that. But if you're not preventing, it's a very good swag of that. I like it. You're not preventing over here. All you're doing is, instead of taking place at one time, you're delaying it by an hour or two. Delaying, so really what you're doing, you've got involvement in melacha. Yeah, it has to do with the definition of Gromit, agreed.
Any element of tinkering is considered
melacha. Yeah, so that's right, you've got an element of Gromit. Yeah, so let me say, it looks like, Chazanish apparently is quote, and he didn't like it at all to be called Gromit. He said it's not even called Gromit over here, because you're actually making something to happen with time lapse. Is that what it's called, time lapse? Time is got delayed, it's a delayed melacha, which is taking place, which you're not making it happen now, but you're making it happen in a certain amount of time. And whether it's kibbuy or it's up, whatever it is, you are causing melacha to happen. It's just not, you're doing the melacha, but just with by a time delay. And it's therefore it's going to be
so
awesome.
The fact that melacha is going to happen anyway, makes it, whether that makes it
wrong. Yeah, could very well be. That yes, the fact that it's for sure inevitably going to happen, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And now you put the pin in a later time.
Right. Very interesting. Very good. Very nice. Well, you're reminding me, Taka, I heard in that soul from somebody that he said that the truth is that if you look at them, even if you don't look at the pin once, the ones that are, what are they called? The ones that go constantly? The ones that... The ones that press in. Yeah. So he says, even those, there's always going to be something in between them. That's what I heard. The same swell you're saying now is also with a...
Not quite, because if in that case you're just pressing down...
Yeah, but it's always a little split second in between, which... That what would be that split second? Is that on or off?
In between?
Yeah, between the pressing downs.
Each one half an hour slot.
Yeah, 50 minutes. Yeah, okay. And what happens between the two? Between the two... Is it not that? Yeah,
it's
continuous. There's no break. Ah, okay, fine. So that could be.
No, no, even better.
Right. He won't flicker in between. That's what I wanted to check. It doesn't flicker. He goes constant. Okay, I hear that. Okay, so there's a difference if that's the case between the pressing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi said this is the points for tonight. So we learned about the difference between the Ner Shemunach Achor HaTeles is also to open the door in its regular way. We spoke about the candle which is right behind the door, that if it's behind or affixed onto the wall, if you're opening the regular way, there's an impact and it gets extinguished. That's if you're opening the normal way. If it's gently, then it's fine. We spoke also about the candle on the door. Then we said there's a difference as to whether it's made out of oil or it's made out of wax. If it's an oil, then you're gonna be over on melacha. However, if it's a wax, then it doesn't make a difference. If opening and closing the door, it's going to be mutter. We spoke about this remark of that it's mutter to close the door or the window when it's windy outside. And we said that B'Shem Zama learns from here the concept that preventing melacha is fine, and he discusses, he compares that to a timer. Good evening, Rabbi Yisrael.